BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Nikki Bady. I'm a radio and TV presenter. I curate, write and host the Arts Hour on the BBC World Service. And here on Radio 4, I co-host Saturday Live. And in my spare time, I watch inordinate amounts of television. I am addicted to Bravo shows and Bravo celebrities. They are a thing. So here in the UK, the television shows and content that go out on the US channel Bravo appear on Hey You and ITVB. So I watch every single one of the Real Housewives franchise. These are reality TV shows set in different cities, mostly across the US, but sometimes beyond, where we get to watch women's lives. They are extraordinarily glamorous. They are very beautiful. They're often quite rich. And we see them living their lives, their relationships, their friendships, their holidays, their fights, their work lives. And I watch from Atlanta to Beverly Hills, Orange County to Potomac, by way of Salt Lake City, Miami, Dubai, Sydney, Durban. I think you get the picture. And the person I'm talking to today, Lauren Zelaznik, she is a media maven, multiple Emmy and Peabody award winning, and she has worked at Bravo. So, Lauren, firstly, would you agree that all the Bravo shows that I've just mentioned have an addictive quality?
I would heartily agree that all of the Bravo shows you just mentioned are highly addictive to many people.
So what is it that you think makes them so addictive? I mean, is there a formula in place? And if so, what is it?
I think that those shows have an interesting dynamic where the reality of the mirror of people living their so-called regular lives draws you in. But then the mirror effect, the heightening of every small act becoming a major plot point, dramatic point, comedic point, kind of amps it up as a stimulus in the brain. And it just makes it more and more compelling because you can simultaneously be in the lives of these characters, but at the same time, view yourself as having nothing to do with the lives of these characters. And I think that makes it doubly compelling. As to whether there's a formula or not, people say there's a formula for everything. People say there's a formula for romantic comedies. But the challenge is that when you are dealing with real human beings or even scripts about human beings, there's such a thing as chemistry. There's such a thing as the magic of the unknown when you're filming something. And there's a good bit of luck, I would venture to say, that send things from pretty good to very good to, as we say here, OMG.
I don't believe in high culture, low culture. I believe in culture. But is it too grandiose of me to believe that when I'm watching these programs and I'm invested in these people's lives, that it's an anthropological study? Because I think they have meaning.
Well, it's not too highfalutin of you, but it certainly might be coming from me to agree with you. We used to joke that we were Margaret Mead, we were Jane Goodall, we were observing creatures in the wild, so to speak, and we were trying to understand groups, communities, tribes of people who were essentially living a life that had not yet been exposed. And, you know, one of the things that consumers, you know, even avid viewers have observed is that the first season of a new show, of a new cast, is not always the best season, but it is always the freshest and least self-conscious season.
Yeah. So the psychology involved for me as a viewer, I'm analyzing behavior. I'm wondering who'll win the battle of good behavior and being noble over bad behavior and being impulsive. But do you, as an executive, a producer, a creator, do you choose, for example, the regional housewives to be in these series because they're culturally informative. So I'm thinking of the insights I've had into the Church of Latter-day Saints, the various black communities in Atlanta, in Potomac. I mean, these are women who I don't see in England. So therefore, are you casting them to provide us with cultural insight?
I can speak to Orange County, New York City, New Jersey, Atlanta, Miami. I would say that they are cast or were cast initially to represent the ethos of the show. Communities are real. Subsets of communities are real. And when we cast originally, these were women who knew each other and therefore had probably self-selected into the sphere of their existence. They worked with each other. They played tennis together. Their children were friends. And then you layer on top of that what you're saying, which is that the genius of it really is you can relate to any group in a certain way, but you can also distance yourself from them because you're not like that. I would say, you know, that's true for you as a British woman. No, you don't know any of these communities. But don't forget, these are wildly popular in the United States, where conceivably, you know, New Yorkers have been to LA, people from LA have been to Atlanta. You know, everyone has seen representations of New Jersey before. So again, you might have familiarity, you might not have familiarity, but I dare say that great drama is supposed to be about universality.
And, well, what you're also saying there is there's a human condition that we are all part of.
Yes. And, you know, for those of your listeners, I'm sure the many who have not experienced what we call reality television and maybe factual or nonfiction in the UK, the situations are wholly unexceptional, yet aspirational.
Yeah.
In this franchise in particular.
It's aspirational because some of us would say, oh, I wish I had those housewives' lives and luxuries, and it's about glamour. At the same time, there is a feeling, like you mentioned, about being slightly distanced from things. We could be glad or even smug that our lives have more meanings than what seem like pretty girl problems. But we do start to genuinely then invest in some of the sad, moving, difficult events. So I'm interested to know how much of that comes out in an edit and is constructed reality, and how much is genuinely being filmed like a fly on the wall.
In my era for these shows, every single one of them, they are fly on the wall. They are not constructed reality. They are not constructed in the editing room.
Well, you're one of the OGs, if you like, for Orange County. That doesn't mean old girls, incidentally, Radio 4 listeners. But there have been changes in the way that we have a duty of care to people in television. We're seeing Bethany Frankel, who was in The Real Housewives of New York, wanting a union. All kinds of things develop as the years go on and we question consent. What do you think is the biggest change that you have seen over these decades of making this kind of television?
That's a very good subject, an important subject, and a complicated subject. I think what you learned from around the year 2000 to now is that people, on the one hand, think they can master the camera and play up what they want to play up to camera and to the audience, when in fact, minutes into filming, it is quite amazing. The camera disappears, the fourth wall disappears, and you're really seeing people for what they are. I would say we've learned that there's a tension between what you referred to, which is showing the different groupings of people who, for natural reasons and historically negatively weighted reasons, are homogenous. and audiences may not want to see homogenous groups of people anymore. And so, ironically, the natural way of casting, hey, who's your friend? Who do you know? Let's meet her, etc. Now, I think it's appropriate and richer for the shows to go one rung out, a little further afield,
right,
to portray more interesting connections, more interesting points of view, more diverse lived experiences.
And do you in any way think that the huge appetite for these shows coincides with anything happening in the world?
Well, there was something just about the confluence of the 90s really ending. The go-go 80s and 90s. That was 20 years of growth. There was the fall of the dot-com era in the late 90s, 2001, Katrina, the hurricane that devastated New Orleans, Louisiana. It was like a reckoning. And what happened in TV was that the greatest era of broad comedy, Seinfeld, Friends, and enormously universal scripted drama, Grey's Anatomy, ER, were less popular. The world was already starting to fractionalize cable TV. It was a precursor of, you know, finding what you want to see on YouTube or Facebook with the algorithm that serves you more and more and more of what you thought you wanted to see on YouTube or Facebook. We were human algorithm makers, and once you liked one kind of show, and we were not trying to be broadcasters, we were trying to be narrowcasters, and we served and served and served and super served affluent, educated women and gay men, and the more we served, the more they ate.
Right.
And we stopped worrying about being judged for... Oh, you know, back to the guilty pleasure phrase, that was always used as an epithet.
Yes.
And I thought it was very anti-woman to say this is something you have to be guilty of, as opposed to this is something I enjoy and celebrate. And I said, you know, no one says to the millions and billions of men every Sunday here in the United States, hey, how was your guilty pleasure show today? The National Football League game of the week. When those two guys clashed helmets and one was lying on the field like paralyzed, what a train wreck. And so we stopped worrying about serving an audience that derived satisfaction, pleasure, and was underspoken to. And we made shows, and guess what? Those shows actually won Emmy Awards and Peabody Awards, and critics started paying attention. It was not a coincidence that female critics started paying attention. And while the male critics were saying, this is the end of civilization, the women were saying, what you're saying, what can I examine that would lead me to understand why I am simultaneously relating to this and judging it?
Exactly. Lauren, I could talk to you for hours. This was so edifying. You are so hyper fluent, and I cannot thank you enough. This is amazing.
This is a real pleasure, and we'll find each other in a pub in your neck of the woods one day.